As our founding fathers recognized, democracy is fragile. People in positions of public trust are duty-bound to defend it, to step forward when action is required. In our country, we don't swear an oath to an individual or a political party. We take our oath to defend the United States Constitution. And that oath must mean something. I say this to my Republican colleagues who are defending the indefensible. There will come a day when Donald Trump is gone, but your dishonor will remain.
It certainly will. Thanks, Liz Cheney.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A. Also in Red Bluff and Redding, California, on KFOI, Round Mountains KKRN, and Eureka's KGOE. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lancaster, Pennsylvania's WLRI, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, Columbus, Ohio's WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ. Down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM950 KTNF, amongst other fine terrestrial affiliates. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, Workforce Rising, No Lies Radio, Verdant Square Radio, Detour Talk, and all your favorite podcast sites except for Spotify. Blanketing Planet Earth 5 days a week. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us for our special coverage of day one of the public hearings of the bipartisan U.S. Select Committee investigating the January 1 attacks.
January 6th.
What did I say?
January 1.
Oh, boy. See, already, I'm already confused. Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi.
Well, it felt like one of those evenings when the entire nation was watching, to be frank. One of those all too rare moments when all of us all at once were experiencing the same set of facts for a change. An echo of the Watergate hearings and others like it, presidential debates, perhaps even the Super Bowl, those rarer and rarer moments when the nation comes together for a shared experience that is carried by every major broadcast outlet and every cable news network. Well, every cable news network except for one. Fox News felt that its viewers just could not handle facts and evidentiary proof that the Republican propaganda outlet has been blatantly lying to them about what happened on January 6, 2021 for the past year and a half. That their own star anchors were key players in a narrative that is the direct opposite of what many of those same star anchors have been telling their viewers for the past year. But for those not brain poisoned enough to be able to handle it, much of the nation was in fact riveted to day one of a promised 6-part series of hearings by the bipartisan U.S. House Select Committee examining the January 6, 2021 insurrection and the events surrounding Donald Trump's attempt to remain in power, which I have referred to as Donald Trump's attempt to steal the 2020 presidential election, and which I believe the committee already began in its first primetime hearing on Thursday night to lay out, even if they have so far failed to use those specific words, which I think best describe what Trump and his supporters attempted both in the lead up to January 6 and on that bloody day itself. The House panel, nonetheless, firmly laid the blame on Donald Trump for what happened, charging that the January 6 assault was not spontaneous, but a coordinated, attempted coup and a direct result of the defeated president's efforts to steal an election that he lost from the American people. With a chilling, never-before-seen 12-minute video of extremist groups leading the deadly siege, and at times startling testimony from Trump's innermost circle, including family members and his closest top advisors, the January 6th committee provided gripping detail on Thursday night in contending that Trump's repeated lies about election fraud and his public effort to stop Joe Biden's victory led directly to the attack and imperiled American democracy, which remains threatened even today by his actions, as Committee Chair Benny Thompson, Democrat from Mississippi, laid out in his opening remarks.
Donald Trump, the President of the United States, spurred a mob of domestic enemies of the Constitution to march down the Capitol and subvert American democracy. January 6th was the culmination of an attempted coup. The violence was no accident. Because of our democracy remains in danger, the conspiracy to thwart the will of the people is not over.
Before this fall's midterm elections, and with Trump considering another White House run, the committee's final report aims to account for the most violent attack on the U.S. Capitol since 1814 and the first one carried out by domestic enemies, to my knowledge, in hopes of ensuring that such an attack never happens again. Testimony on Thursday showed how Trump desperately clung to his own false claims of election fraud, despite those around him insisting that Joe Biden had won the election. In a previously unseen video clip, the panel played a remark from former Attorney General Bill Barr, Donald Trump's former Attorney General, who testified that he told Trump that the claims of a rigged election were BS.
I made it clear I did not agree with the idea of saying the election was stolen and putting out this stuff, which I told the president was bullshit. And I didn't want to be a part of it, and that's one of the reasons that went into me deciding to leave when I did. I observed, I think it was on December 1st, that, you can't live in a world where the incumbent administration stays in power based on its view, unsupported by specific evidence, that there was fraud in the election. I did not see evidence of fraud. And frankly, a year and a half later, I haven't seen anything to change my mind on that.
Donald Trump's own Attorney General Bill Barr. In another clip, the former president's daughter, Ivanka, testified to the committee that she respected Bill Barr's view and therefore agreed with him.
How did that affect your perspective about the election when Attorney General Barr made that statement?
It affected my perspective. I respect Attorney General Barr. So I accepted what he was saying.
In response on Friday, in a rambling, enraged statement on social media, Donald Trump seemed to throw his own daughter under the bus, claiming, quote, Ivanka Trump was not involved in looking at or studying election results. She had long since checked out and was, in my opinion, only trying to be respectful to Bill Barr, adding, quote, he sucked. And describing his former hand-picked AG as, quote, weak and frightened, stupid, and a coward. Other previously unseen video showed leaders of the extremist Oath Keepers and white supremacist Proud Boys groups preparing to storm the Capitol. And one rioter after another, in testimony to the committee, told them they came to the Capitol because Trump asked them to. President Trump summoned a violent mob, said Congresswoman Liz Cheney, the panel's vice chair, who took the lead for much of the hearing. When a president fails to take steps necessary to preserve our union, she said, or worse, causes a constitutional crisis, we are in a moment of maximum danger for our republic. There was a gasp in the hearing room when Cheney read an account that said when Trump was told the Capitol mob was chanting for Vice President Mike Pence to be hanged for refusing to block the election results, Trump responded that, well, maybe they were right. Perhaps Pence, quote, deserves, unquote, to be hanged.
Quote, the president did not really want to put anything out calling off the riot or asking his supporters to leave. You will hear that President Trump was yelling and, quote, really angry at advisors who told him he needed to be doing something more. And aware of the rioters' chance to hang Mike Pence, the president responded with this sentiment, quote, maybe our supporters have the right idea. Mike Pence, quote, deserves it.
Trump did nothing, even when he heard the crowd wanted to hang his own vice president and felt that maybe he deserved it, deserved to hang, deserved to die, because he would not help steal a presidential election for Donald Trump. At another point, it was disclosed by Cheney that Congressman Scott Perry of Pennsylvania, a leader of the efforts to object to the results, had sought a pardon from Trump, which would protect him from prosecution. Other members of Congress, she teased, withholding names for hopefully future sessions, did so as well. When asked about White House lawyers threatening to resign over what was happening in the administration, Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, scoffed, as seen on videotaped testimony, that he thought those attorneys were just whining. In somewhat wrenching testimony, U.S. Capitol Police Officer Carolyn Edwards told the panel that she slipped in other people's blood as rioters pushed past her into the Capitol. That after she was reportedly the first officer to be injured as she was pushed back while trying to maintain the thin security line of bike racks that were set up to protect the Capitol perimeter. She was knocked down and she was knocked out. She suffered brain injuries in the melee, but got back up to continue the fight and was later pepper sprayed by the MAGA mob, which has long pretended to be a friend of law enforcement. Not so much, as it turns out. It was carnage. It was chaos, said Officer Edwards in her testimony live before the panel on Thursday night. The riot left more than 100 police officers injured, many beaten and bloodied, as the crowd of pro-Trump rioters, some armed with pipes, bats, bear spray, charged into the Capitol. At least 9 people who were there died during and after the rioting. Trump declared in response to all of this on social media that January 6, quote, represented the greatest movement in the history of our country. Yes, he really did. In the weeks ahead, the panel is expected to detail Trump's public and private campaign to steal the election, including pressure he put on the Justice Department, congressional lawmakers, state lawmakers, and others to help him steal it from the American people. All of this as the DOJ has arrested and charged more than 800 people for the violence that day and the biggest dragnet in its history. Notably, however, neither Trump nor any of his lieutenants in this unprecedented effort have yet to be charged for their part in what resulted in a deadly coup to try and topple the U.S. government in order to prevent, for the first time in our nation's history, the peaceful transfer of power. Joining us today for our special coverage and insight on all of this, of course, is our own Desi Doyen, who you have already heard from. But
yes.
Good day again, Ms. Doyen.
Hello again.
And our very smart guests today, beginning with the great Heather Digby Parton, longtime award-winning contributor at Salon and the proprietor of Digby's Hullabaloo blog, who will be holding our hand throughout this series of hearings over the next couple of weeks. Good day, Heather.
Good day to you, too. Thanks for having me.
Sure. And, of course, Keith Barber. He is joining us until frequently, a frequent Daily Coast contributor on legal and constitutional matters, known over there as Keith DB. He now writes at his own Medium site. Keith is a former U.S. Army captain, a longtime now retired attorney, and even a lifelong Republican, at least, as he likes to say, pre-Trump. Oh, Keith Barber, welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Thank you, Brad.
Good to have you both here. Heather, let me start with you, and we'll start sort of broad, and then we'll narrow down into some more specifics as we go here. But Heather, who are these hearings, as you see it, geared to? Who are they meant to move? Who's the audience in the committee's mind? Is it the American people? Is it their own colleagues, the DOJ? How do you see this?
Well, the conventional wisdom, I think, coming from the media has been that, you know, at least the savvy insider media has been, you know, well, this is, it's fine that they're doing this and whatever, but it's really aimed at the Department of Justice. And, I have to assume that they are putting this, you know, the information that they've found out there with some thought to the Department of Justice that they are watching and that they will take advantage of whatever the committee has turned up if they are, in fact, investigating. But I don't buy it that that's what the committee is doing. I'm sure that's part of it, but I really think this is about, it's about something else. It's about the, first of all, the public. I think they really feel that if they can put together this story in a compelling way, this is a narrative that they are sort of going to unveil over the course of six hearings and maybe more, apparently. And that people will really understand the gravity of what happened, and they're going to remind people of you know, the horror. I think showing the footage of the events at the Capitol that day, that's always very jarring, even for those of us who've seen hours of it. It always kind of takes you aback on, whoa, you know, that's really something. But I also think they're doing this for history. They're doing it to make sure that there's a record of what happened here. Because, you know, who knows what's going to happen? We, you know, we've talked endlessly in other, you know, programs about what they're planning to do going forward. And I think a lot of this is sort of laying this out so that people will have a record of what happened as we watch what is going to happen going forward. So that's my thought on it, you know, and I think it's really all of the above, basically.
I think it is, too. I mean, because it was laid out very much like a legal case, at least in Liz Cheney's presentation. Keith Barber, I know you've been focusing very closely for many months now on the legal aspects of all of this. And I just kind of felt, you know, no matter how one sees this, it seems like even from day one of these hearings here that something must come of it. It's all too large, too monumental to sort of only be put out there for history, that there must be a legal response. Did you get the sense that that's the case that the committee seems to be making here?
Oh, yes. I think that they very much want a legal response, but they want to convince the American people that a legal response is necessary. That's kind of the bottom line on this, and I think that one tactic they're taking and doing a good job with, a lot of people now have put this on the back burner. You know, there's other issues that are more important to them now, you know, be it inflation or the economy or what else. And I think that what the committee's first mission should be is to show the American people how very, very close this plan to overthrow our democracy came to succeeding. And I would say that it hung by a thread, except for there were lots of very thin threads where if any one of them broke, the plot would have succeeded. If any one person had acted differently, Trump would have succeeded. If Pence simply hadn't been the single flaw in the plan for the Green Bay sweep, or whatever they were calling it, to throw the Electoral College into the House, it would have worked, or it certainly could have. And the violence in the Capitol came very close to succeeding to getting to members of Congress or getting to the vice president with probably deadly intent. And there were just all sorts of ways this could have worked if Mike Pence had gotten in the car.
You know, you're right. You're absolutely right. And also at the DOJ, where, you know, were it not for a whole bunch of folks, DOJ staffers saying we're all going to quit if you replace the current acting AG to put in your plant. Who then intended to let everyone in the state to let the state legislators know that they had found some sort of massive fraud at the DOJ when they hadn't. You're right. any one of those things, and we would be in a very different world right now.
Yes, indeed. And I think that one of the things that we have drawn away from Liz Cheney's opening statement was that she set out seven steps, a seven-part plan that Trump had enacted to steal the election. And I think the committee did a good job of putting him at the center of this attempted coup, at the center of the coordination of those efforts. But Keith brings up an excellent point that at any point in any of this seven-part plan, if any person in any of those 7 points had failed to do their duty to the Constitution, we would be in a very different place now.
I know that both of you, Keith, Heather, and Desi, have all been following this matter pretty closely in various ways over the past year and a half. So I'm wondering, what, if anything, did you learn about all of this that you did not know previously? And that can be specific points or broader ideas as you see them. I will tell you, for my part, it was really the broader picture, that the somberness of the moment, being reminded after the past year and a half of just all measure of insanity, just sort of being brought back to square one, reminded about how serious this was, to the point where, frankly, I kind of became emotional at points during the proceeding when I did not expect to, for reasons that I'm not exactly clear on. Heather, what did you come away with that you did not expect or know beforehand?
Well, I felt the same way, just for the record, that I did have these moments of sort of an emotional reaction, which
yeah,
I didn't expect either, because I'm immersed in this stuff.
Right.
You know, I mean, I read everything about it, so it's not like there were a lot of surprises, but there kind of were. And one of the things, aside from what Desi just pointed out, which mm-hmm. was this idea that there was a 7-point plan.
Mm-hmm.
I had heard Liz Cheney say over the weekend, a week or so ago, that it was, she used some very specific language that I thought was interesting, because she said it was a well-organized plot, and I thought that I hadn't had that impression. What has come out, I think, in this and the way that they're going to present this is that it was organized, that this wasn't just, you know, you kept having the feeling with all this that it was just sort of, they were throwing whatever they had against the wall and just trying to get, you know, whatever they could.
Mm-hmm.
It's starting to look, and it appeared to me last night, that the committee has found that it was much more organized than we realized. That these 7 points, which are, and if you don't mind, I'd just sort of like to say what they basically said they were,
sure,
which was that the first point was they engaged in a massive effort to spread false and fraudulent information. Well, we know that.
Big lie.
Big mm-hmm. lie. The second was that he planned to replace the Attorney General and that whole business with the Department of Justice and how they tried to corrupt the department into helping them, you know, strong arm states and various other parties, and to make the public believe that there was some evidence of fraud.
Yeah, to weaponize the DOJ, as it were.
Exactly, weaponize the DOJ. The third was the pressure on Pence and, you know, the Green Bay sweep and that whole thing. The fourth one was the pressure on Trump's personal pressure on state election officials and state legislators to change the results. The fifth was they instructed Republican, you know, activists and what have you in multiple states to create false electoral narratives and transmit to create false electoral slates and transmit them to the Congress and the National Archives. I mean, that is electoral fraud. I mean, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they, you know, can
that seems pretty
think
illegal.
That yeah, and the DOJ is investigating that. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was, he summoned the mob for January 6th. Trump did, and there's a lot of interesting stuff kind of swirling around about that and how that came to be. And then as it was underway, Trump did nothing. He ignored many pleas for assistance and didn't take any immediate action, even though, you know, Pence was. So there were 7 aspects to this, all of which sort of, it looks as though you can see how one would sort of cascades into the other, and it, leading up to this final moment, they're sort of you know, their Hail Mary with the insurrection. So that, I thought, was very interesting. And it was new to me that they were actually, and I had, like I said, I had heard Cheney say this, and I kind of went, that's interesting. I wouldn't have put it that way. But now I'm beginning to see that that's the case that they're building, that this was actually a coordinated and, you know, fully plotted coup plot that wasn't just ad hoc the way I had thought it was.
And I don't, the only place where I would differ with you there is in describing it as a 7-point plan, in that, you know, I don't get the sense that it was as if each of these things had to happen to bring us to the next one, to bring us to the next one. I think it was, 7 points that they were hoping any of them would work.
That's more like a plot, I guess.
They were trying all of these things. None of them, thankfully, ended up working. But yeah, that they had, thought this through, and they looked at every possible avenue. And I guess that's what will be what the committee will be breaking down in the hearings ahead. Keith, you have any thoughts on is something that you did not previously understand before the hearing, the first day of hearings on Thursday?
Well, I guess it was something we all expected, and it wasn't actually in the hearing, but just minutes after the hearing, Benny Thompson appeared on CNN with Jack Tapper, and it was a fascinating interview.
Mm-hmm.
Because Tapper directly asked Thompson whether or not they were going to present evidence that basically the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers had direct conversations with members of Trump's inner circle. And Thompson's one-word response was yes.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see Tapper's eyebrows go up so quick, his glasses almost came flying off, and he kind of repeated the question again.
Mm-hmm.
And Thompson simply said yes.
And
we're going to be hearing about that down the line, and it's going to be fascinating to find out who those individuals were in the Trump inner circle. And we could speculate all we wanted, and I've got some of my guesses, but
we're going to
find out who those guys are that were, for that 7 point.
And it raises the question, the proverbial question made famous in Watergate, what did the president know and when did he know it? And,
yes.
I'm kind of surprised. I put it in my piece for Salon this morning, but
mm-hmm.
I got that too, just as Keith did. I saw Benny Thompson and my eyebrows went up and the hair on the back of my neck stood up because I went, uh-oh. That sort of explains why there was this focus last night on the Proud Boys and what was going on there on that day with the filmmaker and all of this. I got the same feeling
and
that they're leading up to something, and wherever that leads is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, the idea, and let me just, Keith, hang on, just because your phone broke up a little bit, just I want to make sure that people understand that eyebrow-raising moment was, again, Benny Thompson being asked by CNN's Jake Tapper, are there going to be witnesses that describe actual conversations between these extremist groups and anyone in Trump's orbit specifically, because there really was a big focus, Keith, on the Proud Boys and on the Oath Keepers, the top leaders of which have already been charged with seditious conspiracy, and a focus on that meeting between the leaders of the group. So, I was trying to get a sense of why they felt that was so important to focus on the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers. Is the takeaway you're getting here, Keith, from the remarks from the chairman, that the reason they're focusing on them is because there is much more to come and they are going to tie them directly to the administration in some fashion?
Yes, and Thompson didn't elaborate. It was about as pithy a comment as you can make. He simply answered yes both times.
Mm-hmm.
And an interesting factual nugget that didn't get a whole lot of press at the time, but back in early May, another Oath Keeper flipped. William Wilson is mm-hmm. his name. And it was kind of interesting because his indictment came out the same day as his full cooperation plea agreement. So it was all planned.
Mm-hmm.
But his indictment describes him, Wilson,
mm-hmm.
Attending a meeting on the night of January 6th. So this is as things are settling down. They went back to their hotel where they had their quick reaction force and all the weapons staged there for that.
Mm-hmm.
And Rhodes got on the phone, Stuart Rhodes, the leader of the Oath Keepers, got on the phone to someone who was obviously closely connected with with Trump, because he spoke in a way that indicated that this person could talk to Trump, and in fact he spoke in a way that indicated this person could put Trump on the phone personally with Rhodes,
mm-hmm.
and Rhodes asked him to do that, and whoever the person was refused to do so for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, that's in the indictment, you know, in the statement of the facts associated with the indictment, that this Wilson witnessed Rhodes call someone, that from Rhodes' end of the conversation, Wilson heard him
yeah.
asking whoever was on the other end to tell Trump
right.
To call upon groups like the Oath Keepers to forcibly oppose the transfer of power.
Like he had some sort of a direct line in there.
Yeah.
And do you get the sense then that, I think I heard one of the pundits on CNN or something suggesting that Donald Trump could simply be added in a superseding indictment to an already existing indictment for the Proud Boys or the Oath Keepers for seditious conspiracy, that in fact Trump could just be added to one of those indictments as an attorney. Do you get the sense that that is why they're sort of taking so much time focusing on the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers and then potentially connecting Trump directly to them?
Well, if they indict Trump, I doubt very much that it will be through a supplemental indictment that just adds him to an existing allegations against the Oath Keepers and Proud Boys. And if you read those indictments, they go very specifically into the messages between themselves and the other groups,
mm-hmm.
you know, through their secure messaging apps that they used and so forth, that, you know, unless you, a bombshell discovery occurred that, you know, Donald Trump was using those apps too, I don't think would have much carryover.
No.
If Donald Trump's indicted, I think it will be for reasons that we discussed in my prior call with you, especially with the lay down case for conspiracies against the United States.
Well,
Trump was part of a conspiracy to just block the Electoral College vote.
Well, that's already what they have charged the Proud Boys and the Oath Keepers with, exactly, as I understand
that's true. They engaged. That was the purpose of their
yeah.
conspiracy.
That's why I'm saying.
So they have indeed established that they're willing to charge people for mm-hmm. a conspiracy associated with that purpose.
Right. And tie him to them. And it does seem like you got him. All right, everyone, stay put here for a quick second. I got to take a quick break. We will come back with more of our special coverage of day one of the January 6 hearings in the U.S. House on Thursday night with Salon's Heather Digby Parton and Medium's Keith Barber. I'm Brad Friedman, and you are listening to The Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Not only did President Trump refuse to tell the mob to leave the Capitol, he placed no call to any element of the United States government to instruct that the Capitol be defended. He did not call his Secretary of Defense on January 6th. He did not talk to his Attorney General. He did not talk to the Department of Homeland Security. President Trump gave no order to deploy the National Guard that day. And he made no effort to work with the Department of Justice to coordinate and deploy law enforcement assets. But Vice President Pence did each of those things. For example, here is what General Milley, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, testified to this committee.
There were two or three calls with Vice President Pence. He was very animated, and he issued very explicit, very direct, unambiguous orders. Get the military down here, get the guard down here, put down this situation, etc.
By contrast, here is General Milley's description of his conversation with President Trump's chief of staff, Mark Meadows on January 6th.
We have to kill the narrative that the vice president is making all the decisions. We need to establish the narrative that that the president is still in charge and that things are steady or stable or what's that thing. I immediately interpret that as politics, politics, politics. Red flag for me personally, no action, but I remember it distinctly.
Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Special coverage of the U.S. House January 6th insurrection hearings day one on Thursday night with my guests Salon's Heather Digby Parton and Medium's Keith Barber. Heather, do you have any sense? Do you know, did the folks who testified, you heard General Milley there basically saying that Mike Pence was giving all of the orders, Donald Trump hadn't called at all, and then his chief of staff said, hey, we got to kill this idea that Mike Pence is in charge, when in fact, essentially, Mike Pence was in charge. But do you have a sense, do you know, did the folks who testified on videotape realize that those videotapes might be aired publicly in these hearings?
I'm confident that they must have. I mean, I can't imagine that Ivanka and Jared, for instance, they have lawyers. I'm sure that they did a lot of, you know, negotiating ahead of time, and they had to know that this was going to happen. Now, maybe they didn't realize that it would be in a primetime hearing somewhere. Yeah. And that, you know, by the way, the ratings, the preliminary ratings are in. It looks like about 20 million people watched just on TV. No accounting yet for how many were streaming. So it was a big audience.
Wow.
In any case, I'm sure that they knew. On some level, they had to know. And you know, I mean, I can't really imagine what kind of rationale these people had for their behavior at the time, or even, you know, what they did in the testimony they gave to the committee. But the truth of the matter is, these were subpoenas, or they were invitations in, you know, advance of the subpoena. Mm-hmm. If you did not respond to the invitation, this is serious business. Anybody who is not, I mean, these crazy people like Navarro and Scavino and Steve Bannon, I mean, they're making sort of political decisions. So they're doing this stuff for other reasons. But mm-hmm. any normal person, you know, you get a subpoena, you respond. I mean, because this is it's a legal requirement. Uh-huh. And so I think that most of those people probably knew. Now, I thought the committee was very skillful in the way that they put it together, and I have a feeling we're going to see more of that. There was a real sense of how to tell that story mm-hmm. and lay it out using the words of Trump's own people. I mean, mm-hmm. nothing could be more damning, I think. And I've even seen some stuff on Twitter, and even I went over to Truth Social to see what they were saying. There was mentions of that, kind of like, ooh, that's kind of bad, you know. That was, you know, you've got Barr, and you had Jason Miller, and you had Ivanka and Jared, and it's kind of like, I don't know that that's what the Republicans expected, that this was going to be used in this way, and that they would use their own words to indict Donald Trump. And I think that was tremendously powerful. So, I really do.
So to that end, since you mentioned that they are talking about this over on Donald Trump's personal social media site, and you mentioned the ratings, I mentioned at the top of the show the fact that Fox News was not airing this, presumably because they feel it necessary to protect their viewers from, you know, actual facts and stuff. But do you sense that this material is getting through to those people?
I think it's actually getting through to some people. I mean, of course, I have no hope that the hardcore cult members are going to change their minds on this. And in fact, it's important to look at what Fox really did, which was something extraordinary. It wasn't just that they ignored the hearing. In fact, they didn't. What they did was they had Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity on. They put the hearing on sort of on a sidebar, mm-hmm. and then they put in, you know, they had guests and commentary that were completely from Bizarro World, that were telling this a completely different story of what was going on. No advertisements, so
yes.
that people would not be tempted to break away and maybe check out you know, what's really going on every single network in America.
Yeah, give them no opportunity to look
away. Exactly. And so they laid out a complete counter-narrative. I mean, and this was Tucker Carlson at his worst. You know, I mean, this is just crazy stuff. Going back to the FBI being involved and all that stuff, they had Tulsi Gabbard on there. They had some real fringe characters on as guests. And apparently one of the producers of NBC was watching it, and they compared whenever they cut away from the sidebar to just go full, you know, on the face of the person who was speaking. They did it whenever there was any footage of the actual
riot,
so that people wouldn't see the violence. So they were doing something even worse, I think, than ignoring it. It would have been one thing if they just sat there and talked about, I don't know, Dr. Seuss and Mr. Potato Head all night. I mean, that would have been one thing. But this was an actual propaganda operation.
Yeah.
That was full bore, no advertisers. This was Fox News making a very, very serious statement. Now, according to the ratings, from what I saw, the preliminarily, they got their usual 3 million. You know, a lot more people saw the other.
Yeah.
And I'm sure a lot of people streamed it too. You know, that's the new, I'm sure many people just watch on C-SPAN or whatever. So, I think that there's some leaking that's going into their little
their bubble. I was, you know, I was watching because I had watched Tucker at the top of the hour when the hearing was supposed to start. They were a couple of minutes running behind, so I turned over to Fox News. I was watching Tucker, who was telling people, disinforming his audience, that this was not an insurrection at all. It was because apparently, I think his reasoning was that there were few, if any, guns recovered during the attack, so it could not be an insurrection. But boy, you know, watching that footage, particularly of the violence at the Capitol, and then hearing from the U.S. Capitol Police officer, Carolyn Edwards, while I was watching all of that, I'm hearing Tucker's voice, his disinformation in my head that this was not an insurrection. That was quite a confusing message for my brain. I really
welcome to Fox World.
Yeah, and I guess you got to either go all in or get out. Keith, you're a former now Republican. Do you get the sense that any of this stuff will bleed out? You know, beyond
the bubble,
beyond the already believers, I guess.
There is the core of Trump believers.
And you're down. And by the way, you're down in the Villages, as I recall, right?
I am indeed.
Okay,
yes.
So
and I can walk around in our block and see Trump 2024 signs up all over the place.
Wow.
As I think you guys were suggesting, there is a core of Trump believers, the cult, that are completely immune to any level of factual presentation. It does not matter what level of facts are involved, and they still believe the election was stolen. They believe that even though Barr said it was not, they believe it even though other senior Trump officials say it was not, they believe that even though 60 court cases say it was not stolen, but they believe. And nothing you can say will convince them.
Even the idea, apparently, Congressman, this is clip 16, I think, Des, Congressman Scott Perry of Pennsylvania, and apparently multiple other Republican members of Congress sought pardons from the president, from Donald Trump at the time, pardons for, I guess, their own attempts to overturn the election. That, according to Liz Cheney on Thursday night.
Representative Scott Perry, who was also involved in trying to get Clark appointed as Attorney General, has refused to testify here. As you will see, Representative Perry contacted the White House in the weeks after January 6th to seek a presidential pardon. Multiple other Republican congressmen also sought presidential pardons for their roles in attempting to overturn the 2020 election.
Now, I don't know if either of you have any guesses about who those other members of Congress might be, but...
I do.
Do you? You have a guess? Go
yeah,
ahead.
Yeah, there was an article in the Arizona, one of the Arizona papers a couple of months ago that I just happened to remember.
Yeah.
Andy Biggs and Paul Gosar are both among those who did. And I've heard also that Mo Brooks. I'm thinking Godfather. Mo Brooks was also one who asked for one, as well as Perry, who they mentioned in the hearing. So there was more than a handful of them. And Jared had, you know, he was juggling a lot of those things, apparently. Who knew?
Yeah, he said he didn't have time for anything else because he was trying to do as many pardons as possible. Keith Barber, can you walk around the villages down there in Florida and ask the Trumpers why it would be that all of these congressmen would possibly feel they needed a pardon from Donald Trump if they did nothing wrong?
You know, we mostly avoid political discussion down here to keep the peace.
Probably smart.
But I think it will probably be interesting to see if some of these congressmen over the coming days come out on their own, come out of the closet, so to speak, on their own to say, yeah, I was one of them, so that they can preempt committee disclosing it and then spin it in their own way. And if I was to ask a neighbor, I think the answer would be something similar to what you may be hearing coming from these congressmen soon, is that they, of course, knew that the Biden administration would weaponize the Department of Justice against good patriotic Republicans, and therefore they were just trying to get a pardon to frustrate the corrupt ends of the Biden administration.
Good explanation.
Rationalization. If you don't hear that in the next few days, call me back and tell me I was wrong, but I think you will.
No, I think you may be very right about that. Let me take another quick break here. We'll come back with our final segment with Keith Barber and Heather Digby Parton, and of course, Desi Doyen and myself. I'm Brad Friedman. You're listening to special coverage of day one of the January 6th House hearings. I'm Brad Friedman. This is the Bradcast. Hey, this is Brad. Please consider supporting whichever progressive media outlet is serving you. Most, just like us, do not receive corporate or political support. We all need your support to counter the powerful corporate media echo chamber. From Desi Doyen and myself, thank you.
What I saw was just a war scene. It was something like I had seen out of the movies. I couldn't believe my eyes. There were officers on the ground. They were bleeding. They were throwing up. They were, I saw friends with blood all over their faces. I was slipping in people's blood. I was catching people as they fell. It was carnage. It was chaos. The absolute war zone that the West Front had become.
Oh, man. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com discussing the day one of January 6 hearings on Thursday night with Salon's Heather Digby Parton and Medium's Keith Barber. Keith Barber, as a veteran, you heard U.S. Capitol Police Officer Carolyn Edwards there, who was actually knocked out cold during this this attack as she was trying to guard the perimeter, and then got back up, started slipping on people's blood, was eventually pepper sprayed. As a veteran yourself, what do you make of the many other veterans and law enforcement officials who were actually in the crowd that day, including members of the Oath Keepers, who seemed to so easily turn against their fellow law enforcement officers on January 6th? What, if anything, should we learn from that as we keep in mind all of these years of, their thin blue line flags and we support the troops and all of that? What do you take away from that?
Well, they're worse than vast hypocrites. They're traitors. I honestly, Brad, you've hit a sensitive point with me here. First of all, I think that when Officer Edwards was making those comments, America got very quiet because it was just so impactful and profound. But the officers that you speak of that were in the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys and others that were attacking our Capitol, I wish I could speak to some of them. I really do, so that I could tell them to their face that they violated the oath that they took when they rose their hand to serve this nation, and that they were, when they attacked others who did the same. And I'm appalled at it. I guess I'm not too horribly surprised. I'm aware of the mentality that can produce it. But on the other hand, you know, Officer Edwards, as you pointed out, at the very earliest stages, was knocked unconscious from this, and she got back up and dusted herself off and went back to manning the lines. How many of us would have done that under those circumstances?
Yeah.
And, I don't have the answer to that, and because I'm not sure I would.
Yeah.
But one thing I will say is that individuals such as Officer Edwards are the kind of people that make this a great nation, and certainly not the people who breach their own oath to attack her.
I would echo that, and I would also note that the notion that a cop could be knocked out cold, and that they were so ill prepared for all of this that there was, you know, nobody standing by to take her out. And I'm not blaming them. I'm saying that, you know, the fact that the administration, who knew this was going to happen, we are learning,
The Trump administration
purposely did not bother to make sure there was, you know, adequate defenses, that when a cop falls down and gets knocked out, that, you know, there's first aid, that she's taken out, that replaced with someone else.
Well, I would jump in and say that I think that was actually that sort of lack of preparedness, that lack of sharing of intelligence information was maybe, sadly, part of the plot in order to make sure there was not enough people there for the violent mob to be able to do what they were going to try to do.
Okay. Why they were trying to keep everything a secret, basically. Heather, and I've got just a minute or two here before I have to get out. Heather, the corporate media in the run-up to all of this over the past week seemed to offer the sort of the same narrative over and over again. They were asking members of the committee, do you have information that will get the attention of the Americans, that will grab them by the lapels, that will somehow change, people's minds who have already been dug in? And I know I saw you mention on Twitter that was driving you a little nuts, but did that happen on Thursday night? And let me leave it with that question. Were we shooken out of our stupor at this point so far?
Well, I suppose it remains to be seen, but I think that they were very powerful, and I was quite surprised by the media's actual reaction in the moment to the hearing. They seemed to be shooken, as you put it, as much as the rest of us were. So, you know, it was horrible. They spent so much time just sort of downplaying and kind of creating a narrative that, nobody cares about this, and Americans only care about inflation and gas prices, and blah, 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 this is old news, et cetera, et cetera. It was just driving me crazy because, of course, they were setting that narrative.
Mm-hmm.
And what it did was set this huge high bar for the committee to hit, because they were going to have to present something that was, you know, really, really impactful. And, in fact, they did. So I think, you know, I have a good feeling about the idea that I think that this, and, of course, this first hearing was just to whet the appetite, because the details are going to come later. So I think that however much they tried to sort of make it so that everybody shrugged and moved on to whatever the next story was, I don't think it's going to work. I think that even they were moved enough to say, maybe we need to be a little bit more responsible in the way that we, you know, present the narrative of what's going on here.
And do they run the risk at this point of wearing people out, losing their attention with, what, five more of these at least to come, Heather?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I mean, this is an incredible story. It's historic, and I think that people are paying attention. I think they're going to pay attention, and yes, we are capable of having more than one concern at the time, okay? The idea that the American people are so shallow that we can only think about gas prices and can have absolutely no other concern in life is ridiculous.
Very quickly, once around the table for everyone here, let me start, I guess, with you, Heather. What do you hope to see in the days ahead? What do you expect to see?
Well, I think I hope to see, and I'm kind of expecting to see, because they did such a good job last night, mm-hmm. that we're going to see this whole story filled out with details that we haven't seen yet. A lot of this has been reported in the press, but I think that what we're going to do, and they're going to continue to use the words of Trump's own people to make the case, and I think that's, you know, as I said earlier, I think that's very powerful.
I think they got a lot more in their pocket in that regard than we may realize.
Yeah.
Keith, what do you hope to see? What do you expect to see in the days ahead?
Well, I think one of the reasons that people are going to keep coming back is because last night they did a really good job of teasing us, if you will, about some real interesting things to come.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about several of those already today, to include the name of the congressman who asked for pardons, or the names of the individuals who were in close contacts with the Proud Boys or Oath Keepers,
yeah.
and so forth. That's certainly going to keep me tuning in. And I'm looking forward to finding out those information, that kind of information. I think that the American people need, in terms of convincing to get rid of Trump as a political force in this country is to believe that he was responsible for the violence that occurred there on that day, and to understand how close our democracy came to failing.
Yep.
Yes.
Desi Doyen.
And the American people, just if they can communicate that, the American people is the win.
I'm going to just co-sign with Keith and Heather on both of these, and I'll just say that every successful coup was preceded by a failed coup, so I really do hope that they continue to prosecute the case.
Absolutely.
As I expect they will. Yeah, and we've got five more of these. We'll be covering these as closely as we can, as closely as warranted over the next week or two. I want to thank both of my guests today, Heather Digby Parton. You can, as always, find her work at salon.com or digbysblog.net. You can find her on the Twitters at digby56. Keith Barber is now writing over at Medium. You can find him at keithdb.medium.com and on the Twitters at KeithDB80. Thanks, guys. Greatly appreciate everything, and we'll be talking to you again soon. Desi Doyen is our producer. Thank you as well. And thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, download it anytime for free at bradblog.com, all of which is made possible only by listeners like you who stop by bradblog.com/donate. Thank you. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks and the Twitters, I am The Brad Blog. That's it. Until we see you again here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.